crowd on its feet. 20,000 plus here, trying to be that sixth man. Fires a long one. Oh, the bottom! I can't take it anymore!
Welcome to The Bottom Up, a show about the Cleveland Cavaliers and NBA basketball.
She's a silver lining, Lone Ranger riding through an open space. In my mind, when she's not right there beside me, I go crazy, cause here isn't where I wanna be. And satisfaction feels like I'm just a memory. And I can't help myself, alright. All I ever say is, are you mine?
Episode 2, Bottom Up Show. Logan, we didn't get canceled after 1 week. How you feeling about it?
I'm feeling pretty good. We didn't do a great job. Let's hope we got people listening.
Survive in advance, baby. Survive in advance. We've got at least 31 followers on the Twitter machine. We're making it big now.
Oh, we're blowing up.
We're shooting for 40 next week.
That's unbelievable.
All right, so this is a weekend wrap-up that we're doing. Quick show, hoping to keep it around 20 minutes for you guys. Cavs played a couple games this weekend. We got some things to talk about. Definitely want to talk about Cavs Heat. Kyrie, how he played in the fourth. A little LeBron talk, of course. That seems to be all the rage these days, so we'll get into that for a minute. Also, are we set with our backcourt, Kyrie and Dion? How do we feel about that going forward? And then, obviously, the emergence of CJ Miles over these past two games, does that change the draft equation at all? So let's jump into it. Logan, how'd you feel about Kyrie in that fourth quarter? It looked like LeBron shut him down a little bit.
I didn't like it at all. I didn't like anything I saw, really. I mean, he was scared to go to the basket. He was scared to do much. And that's understandable when LeBron was on him. But It made sense. You know, you got LeBron. You got they double-teamed him out, like, beyond the three-point line when it was in crunch time in the final 2 minutes. I mean, that's pretty intimidating. LeBron by himself, I mean, is the best defender in the National Basketball Association. So when you got...
Yeah, without question.
So when you got another guy at him, too, like, I'm passing the ball, too. Like, I understand that. But what really hurt me, I get offensively having some woes. He's a young guy. That makes sense. And Dion, and they realized Dion was taking it to the basket, taking on Chalmers, who was clearly the weak man out there. It all made sense, and I was kind of okay with it. I mean, of course I want Kyrie taken over because no one's better in the business than Kyrie. But the problem for me was his performance defensively in that fourth quarter. I mean, we're in a close game against the Miami Heat, and this guy... he's shuffling his feet back on transition. His transition defense was appalling. Inexcusable.
Yeah, especially against the Heat. You better get back on defense. Otherwise, that's 10 points reeling off before you even blink.
I know. They run it. Like, I don't know what he was... I mean, he got so up for that OKC game. He played the best game probably he's played all season because it was against Oklahoma City. And that right there, and in the numbers he put up, I don't remember exactly. I remember the fourth quarter. How many points did he have? Do you remember? It was
a bunch.
Oh, it was ridiculous. He was shooting like contested threes right over Westbrook. Like his confidence was sky high.
And well, that's the difference, though. Right over Westbrook, you can't shoot over LeBron, which seemed to mess with him.
I mean, on offense, like I said, it made sense to kind of pass to Dion, but at least he just seemed disconnected. Like he didn't even try to, like, set up anything. I felt like he got the ball and was like, oh my god, I better get it to somebody else.
Yeah, this was kind of the first time I've seen him in a while. Sometimes he's had these games recently where he's maybe a little out of it, but it seemed like he wanted to be into it. But LeBron was messing with him so much that he didn't, like you said, he was passing it to Dion, and that's great. That was the right thing to do. That's why we drafted Dion Waiters to be a backcourt mate with him.
Yeah,
if there's a
exactly.
night where Kyrie's either off or he's getting shut down by LeBron. I mean, I think back to when we had LeBron and we're playing Orlando in that famous Eastern Conference Finals or whatever it was, and we put Mike Brown put LeBron on Jameer Nelson, which I didn't necessarily agree with, but all Jameer did was he kicked it to his open guys and they knocked down shots. So if LeBron's going to be on Kyrie, that was cool that Kyrie trusted Dion enough, and Dion really just being the fearless guy that he is, really put
especially
up
especially on Chalmers.
Game. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he was what we needed. We needed him to step up in that moment. That game's not close if Dion Waiters doesn't come to play last night. The issue I had with Kyrie was that, just like you said, it wasn't as if he had that calmness and that control to be like, okay, LeBron's guarding me. I'm going to set this up and I'm going to get
exactly.
Dion
I'm
going to
set the
looks.
Play going. Everything's going
right.
to flow. It was
it
I got to get rid
like
of the ball.
Frantic.
Yeah, I got to
get
rid of the ball because
exactly.
I don't want it. And that that scares me.
Just, yeah, a little bit. What I will say is this, though, and this is kind of where I tend to fall on it. Obviously, from a single game standpoint, it's not a great game, not a big win for, or not a good performance in the fourth for Kyrie. He got shut down, for lack of a better description, by LeBron. But I think that for a 20-year-old in the NBA, whose past week or two has been basically, he's been the flavor of the month in the NBA. He's, goes into the All-Star weekend, breaks Brandon Knight's ankles, has a good All-Star game, wins a three-point contest, comes out against New Orleans on national TV, and puts up like 20 in the fourth quarter. I mean, he's really, everyone's jumping on the bandwagon, but he's 20. And so to run into the best player in the NBA right now, without question, who's playing at a level that I don't know that I've seen really ever from a guy 6'8", for his size. I mean, his efficiency right now for LeBron is just unbelievable. So to get locked up by that guy, it's almost good motivation to say, hey, listen, you've come a long way, Kyrie, but you're still 20, you still got a lot you need to learn and get used to these situations. Oh. But like you said, the worst part, though, is
the
that
defense.
The defense. LeBron won that game because LeBron played defense. LeBron's offense in the second half, he, like, missed a layup. I mean, he's been shooting at such a high percentage, so his overall percentages still aren't terrible, but in the second half, he struggled a little bit offensively.
He was like
but
10 and
19. More than made up for it. Yeah, he more than made up for it with the defense, though.
But it's human.
Yeah, it's still good.
Not
right.
LeBron.
Right. It was other guys hitting threes, carrying the load a little bit offensively at the end there for the Heat. But with Kyrie, he's got to take that page out of the LeBron playbook there and say, hey, wait a minute. If I'm not having if I'm getting shut down for whatever reason, I don't care if you have the flu or your socks are too sweaty, whatever the deal is, if you're not playing good on offense, you sure as heck better put in that effort on defense and not vote. And like you said, he's shuffling his feet back on defense in transition. That's not going to fly.
I don't know how this hasn't been addressed. I've mentioned this to you, but we forget. We get so excited about the amazing things he does offensively that we forget. I mean, I mentioned it earlier that he's got that Ole defense where he just lets him run by. You know, he's just like the matador. Just, all right, bull, get right by me. He just... We kind of let it go, I mean, because he's just so spectacular. He's young still. Defense always comes second. You know, when you get a rookie, and if they blow up offensively, they're going to struggle defensively. You know, that usually comes later. If they really are great offensively, that's a good sign. Like, all right, they'll probably pick up the defense later. But the problem is that it's one thing to, like, do a lot of reach-in fouls. Like, Deion gets a lot, like, has a lot of slap moments because he's like, oh, snap, they beat me off the dribble. I got to start stop him. I get that, but what the problem with Kyrie is, it's like he can't get a reach-in foul because he's not down there yet.
His stance didn't even is terrible. Run down the his defensive stance is a joke. He rarely gets low.
And he just shuffles his feet. Like he's like, oh, I missed a shot. He runs like a 50-year-old fat man down the court. And here is the best, he's got the best handles, he's quicker than a hiccup, yet he shuffles his feet down the court. Like, and this happens, if you watch a Cavs game, you will notice this. I don't care what game it is. I don't care. It's not. This will happen every game several times. And he's giving up easy buckets. And I don't know how a guy like Byron Scott, a stickler for things like this, hasn't just ripped him a new one.
Yeah, the only thing I can think, and I guess this makes sense to a certain extent, but it's not really an excuse, it's just perhaps a reason, is that he's been asked to carry so much of the offensive load that maybe it's an energy thing. But going forward, I mean, when Deion steps up,
not
and
in the fourth quarter in the final 2 minutes.
Well, right, and against the Heat too. I mean, to expend energy, that's the time. But if we're gonna have Deion step forward and CJ Miles have the game that he had against the Heat, I think that at that point, Kyrie needs to say, okay, maybe I can be a little more of a facilitator on offense. My guys have my back tonight. I need to make sure we're not giving up easy buckets. So we'll see. How that happens going forward. But I do agree. I think that's a really big thing for them to look at. With Byron, if you're going to improve the young kid, I mean, his offensive game is so polished, but it's that defensive end where even a marginal effort increase would yield dividends. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, just some effort. I'm not asking him to get
at least look like you're trying.
Yeah, I'm not asking him to become like a Tony Allen overnight. I'm asking him to just try.
Yeah.
You know, and but I get he's 20 years old and he is asked to do a whole heck of
a
lot offensively. So I get it, I guess. I just, there comes
a
time in the first quarter, maybe every now and then it's going to happen. I kind of get it, but we're talking fourth quarter, final 2 minutes against the Heat in a nail biter. And you can't get down the court. That hurts me as a fan. a little bit.
That's Duke Blue Devil floor stopping time. So let's hope Kyrie gets on that.
That stings. That stings a bit.
So let's move on. Let's talk a little bit here about LeBron. Now, the whole conversation nationally and back in Cleveland has been 2014. You know, oh, we just got to see LeBron and Kyrie on the same court. Is that what it's going to be in 2014? I mean, there's all the cap space and, you know, the rumors getting floated by his people that maybe, you know, that might be a possibility, whatever, whatever. What I haven't heard, though, the conversation that I'd like to have with you is, do you think if LeBron had stayed in Cleveland that he would have reached this level that he's currently at, where his game is at? I mean, the efficiency in his game right now is just staggering. I mean, his recent game logs, he's shooting 65% in February, 43% from three. He went, these are just the past few games here, he goes 7-12 against Philly, 11-15 against a really good Chicago team, 8-15 against Atlanta, 14-24 against OKC, 11-15 versus Portland, 12-18 versus the Lakers. I mean, you can just keep reeling these off. He's just having unbelievable games. It's just staggering. And with all the rebounds and assists, too. Do you think he reaches this level if he's still in Cleveland?
I mean, that's it's a tough order. I mean, it's hard to answer that question. How would you ever really know? But I'm going to give it a whirl.
Do it big.
If he stayed in Cleveland, I don't know. I think a big part of his development, and I see if you agree with me, is that how the villain thing, you know, he had to become a villain. And if anything, he put on this whole new type of pressure. I mean, he always had pressure. People are like, well, if he wants to be if he wants to be as good as Jordan. But I don't think he ever stopped and said to himself very much until he's gotten to the Heat that, like, man, like, I want to be Michael Jordan. Like, he was happy. He was fun. He was doing the goofy, like, take a picture with everybody before the pregame ritual kind
of
deal.
Hey, that was the highlight of Boobie Gibson's life, man.
Do you remember that, like, that ridiculousness stuff going on? Like, it was just, I mean, so I don't think he ever really, he didn't really seem like that he wanted that. And he goes to the Heat and he gets to be and he's like, oh, I want to go to the Heat because I don't have to do that. Now I can win and people get off my back and now I don't have to work as hard kind of deal. With Wade and Bosch, I feel like that might have been part of his thought process. I'm not sure, but that's what it looks like to me. And then instead, it blows up in his face, and now there's even more pressure because he's with them, and he's a villain. Now, people don't even like him for doing this. So, like, now he's like, what is going on? And I feel like because of that, he worked even harder, and he's kind of developed and matured, and he has this killer instinct that he never had in Cleveland, and I don't know if he would have developed it, because everyone would have been, like, coddling him still. I don't see why that would have changed.
Yeah, on this point, I totally agree with you. I actually have pretty much almost word for word the same point in my notes. I think that the loathing, the outpouring of loathing, the burning of the jerseys, all these things, he's so did not expect because he spent the previous 7 years. I mean, who was taking shots at LeBron? I mean, there was always little things, little stories that would come out. Yeah, that's about it. But, like, I mean, even just, I'm talking in the Cleveland media. I mean, who was taking shots at LeBron as far as, you hear little stories like, oh, maybe he doesn't tip at restaurants and stuff like that. But as a general rule, I mean, he was the golden child.
And he's bringing in billions of dollars. Like, how can you talk bad about this guy?
Right. And so, for someone like that, who's so insulated by praise, to make a decision, to do it in such a ridiculous way, and then to have the reaction be, I mean, you saw his face when he saw that they were burning jerseys. I think Wilbon's the one who told him on ESPN post-decision that they were burning his jersey in Cleveland, and he was shocked. And it was almost like he took for granted that everyone just really liked him. And I think they have to deal with that outpouring of loathing. The biggest thing about LeBron and his character seems to be that he likes to be liked. He's not one of those guys like Kobe who really embraces the villain. He seems like someone who wants to be liked. So when you go into negative town and everyone starts hating on you, I mean, you really have two options. Either you turn into a villain, you do the little heel turn, or you take a look at perhaps some of the substance of what people are saying, and you look in the mirror and you say, well, what could I have done better? Why do people not like me now? And where's the criticism coming
how
from?
How do I shut them up?
Right, and I think that in a large way, he seems to have matured as a person in Miami. I mean, I don't know about his personal life as much. I don't follow it as closely as when, like, Windhorst was in Cleveland, but you know, watching him play, his game, I think your basketball game is a reflection of your character in so many different ways, and his game has become so efficient And he's doing all of the things in Miami that we always hoped he would do in Cleveland. He was so good in Cleveland, but little things like going into the post more, not settling for jump shots, not taking six heat checks because he made one jump shot, things like that, and really refining the jam. He's done so much to just be this efficiency monster in Miami, and I don't know that he would have got there in Cleveland with everyone just coddling him.
Yeah,
I think had been Spoelstra, Riley, Dwayne Wade, all these guys who had rings, who can actually, they're like the black belts. And I don't know if there was a black belt in Cleveland. Like, I don't think Mike Brown could really tell LeBron much. I think LeBron was clearly the best, like, who really had the juice to tell LeBron anything in Cleveland, whereas in Miami, he's got
clearly
three guys
no one.
Who,
I mean, yeah. It was apparent that LeBron was calling the shots.
He was running
there.
The show, yeah.
And I mean, he was and he's been doing it ever since he got there, pretty much running the show. And his teammates were fine with it, and it just wasn't. I don't know. It would have been different. I mean, who would we have gotten to change things? It's not like Cleveland's going to get Dwayne Wade. And I think the villain role was the biggest thing. I mean, I just don't know if he ever would have become this guy in Cleveland, which is a shame because. It would have been nice.
He's really, really good now. Yeah, he's by far. He's on a trajectory
now. You give me this
kind
of LeBron with and maybe in that San Antonio series, maybe we win two games instead of none.
You give me this LeBron in that San Antonio series, all bets are off.
I don't know about... Because we had a really... His supporting cast, though, was...
What are you trying to say about Eric Snow and Sasha Pavlovich?
Yeah, Pavlovich started, right?
Yeah, he started.
Ouch.
Yeah, we're going to start the ghost of Luke Jackson.
I mean, he's the 10th man on the Portland Trailblazers, so what the heck am I talking about?
I'm impressed he's still in the league, actually.
What am I talking about?
That's news to me, but that's
You didn't know he was
cool.
in the league?
He was out of it for a while,
Yeah, he's
he?
Back. He's played, like, all year for Portland. He actually gets, like, decent minutes. Like,
to be fair, Luke Walton gets decent minutes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for talking about Luke Walton. Thank you. Thank you for saying that he's not good.
I like the slide of it. It's all relative. But yeah, so I think it's an interesting thought exercise to think about. You know, maybe the decision, as poorly handled as it was, maybe it really worked out best for LeBron and for Cleveland. I think Dan Gilbert learned a ton from it, and the way they've built this team around the draft now has been so much more, I think, sustainable than what they were trying to do with LeBron with the free agents and stuff. And I think for LeBron, it was best to go to an area that challenged him more, to be with people who could challenge him more, and really take that hard road. And certainly, I think in hindsight, he could have handled the departure better. But I think it's tough to argue that
just a bit.
Both franchises aren't in reasonably good shape. I think it'd be different. Our perspective would be different if we didn't have Kyrie Irving, 20-year-old All-Star.
Yeah, what if we had Derek, like Derek Williams or whatever? I know.
Oh God, let's move on. Moving on. I don't want to talk about that alternative.
Oh no!
Good Lord! Yeah. So let's finish up real quick, spend a couple minutes here talking about this Kyrie and Dion backcourt. Do you think that we are set for the future with our one and our two? And also, do you think that the recent emergence of the ever-streaky CJ Miles as the backup scoring guard is prominent enough where maybe in the draft we don't have to worry too much about filling that backcourt scoring need or even a wing scoring need at the top? And maybe can go with that big that we were talking about before. How do you feel about it?
Well, first off, I mean, our backcourt, I feel set for now.
So you just hedged completely on that?
Well, I mean, when it comes to Kyrie and Dion, I mean, for starting backcourt, we're good. I mean,
right,
there's no way you can say we're not. I mean, Kyrie, duh. And I think Dion, I'm a big Dion fan. I realize he shoots. A lot of people are down. I'm like, oh, he shoots low numbers and all this and all that. But he's got the killer instinct, and he's slowly getting it. Throughout the season,
he's been like 50%.
Yeah, exactly. His shots are so much better. He's getting to the rim, and he can finish at the rim. And if you have two guys, Kyrie and Dion, who can go in, finish at the rim, you can't double-team them both. I love it. You know, I'm very excited. I think next year, I think Dion's going to have a huge leap. And I think that's only going to make Kyrie's game even easier. And I'm intrigued to see them work together. And I think it could work really well. Because I think Kyrie's one of those guys, he likes taking over in the fourth quarter and all that. But he doesn't mind, you know, he doesn't need to have the ball the whole game. He's not Allen Iverson, you know. So he's fine with letting Dion dominate a third quarter or something if Dion's feeling it.
Or, yeah, why not?
And he's totally cool with it. But in the final 2 minutes, it's going to be Kyrie's ball. and that's the way it works. And it's beautiful. And so I think they'll work well together in the long run too. Now, when it comes to CJ Miles, I think he is not
perhaps
the answer.
A different story.
I'm not excited. I mean, it's only been two games. I think he's done a lot better because of our. He's done a lot better with the second unit, not because he's changed too much, but because the people around him have changed. With Mo Spates demanding attention in the paint,
right,
which is real nice. And you got
we got Ellington, all these guys.
Livingston. Oh my goodness, Livingston. Yeah. I couldn't remember. I was just going to say that lanky son of a gun. Livingston. Now you got Livingston. Livingston's a little better with the ball. He's a little smarter with the ball. And Ellington's, they're spreading the floor. It's just a better, more competent unit that makes sense. And what it's allowing is CJ Miles is getting spot-up threes and spot-up looks. And early in the season, he would just take the ball up the court himself or get it later and dribble, 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 try to create something. And it wasn't working for him. But when he's wide open, when the guy's open, he's streaky as all get out. If you give him some good looks, he's going to have a few games like he had like in Miami. But he's not going to consistently do that. I don't see anything to make me think that's something he can consistently do. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have a role on our bench. But because of his emergence, that's not a reason to not look at a small forward in the draft. I feel like if we don't, we should definitely look at it and weigh our options with that, especially and bolstering our backcourt.
Do you think he could at least keep the seat warm for a year? If like, do you can? I guess my question would be: do you consider a paint or rim protecting big man to be a more dire need than maybe a winger or two?
Oh yeah, you know, yeah, okay. Yeah. I definitely think a rim protecting big man. You know, I like Tristan getting the rebounds and gutting it out, but I mean, there's nothing better. But I like Zeller. I do like Zeller. I didn't at all. The Orlando game, he really showed me.
Dude, I'm telling you, he's
got some
set.
Skills. I mean, he's got some. He's smart. And
dude, those pump fake drives that he had. I mean, once he starts hitting that jump shot consistently,
yes,
which he will.
And he will. He will definitely. Yeah. I believe he'll definitely start hitting that jump shot consistently. But he is just so timid right now. He is scared. He doesn't follow through his shots a lot because you can just see it in his eyes. He's like, I don't want to get swatted. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not. It hasn't slowed down for him enough yet.
It hasn't slowed
down a little
down
bit, but not
it slowed down a little bit, but not enough. And I mean, and he saw some blood in the water with Vucevic, who's going to be a solid player, but rookie. And he realized like, hey, I can score on this guy. And he took him to town, drove inside on him, was cutting around him, getting put back slams. I mean, it was like, who is this guy? Is this Tyler Zeller? I haven't seen this player all year. But I just worry about Zeller in that he's still really he's a small guy. He's not really big, and
he's
tall and skinny. Yeah, but
he's not a rim protector.
He'll
like
never
Z.
be
Z
a
was
exactly.
Huge, but
he'll
he wasn't
never
a rim
be
protector.
A rim protector. And so why not get a rim protector? Get someone who offers us something different. See how this all plays out. And maybe we have a really, and then we get more impressive bigs, a real wider range of guys, and we can do all kinds of things in the next few years.
Right.
And see how they develop.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave us with this thought, and then we'll get out of here. But for potential 2014 lineup, I'll whisper it. Kyrie, Dion, he who must not be named, Tristan Thompson, Nerlens Noel. I go to battle with that lineup every time.
Where did you get? We're getting Nerlens, huh?
Yeah, that's where we're going, man. He's gonna slide to
him.
That sixth or seventh pick.
I don't care.
And then,
I'd take him even with his bum knee.
Yeah, man, it's 2013. We can fix a knee. Look at Sean Livingston. Good lord, he's still back.
Yeah, it only took him like 5 years.
Well, we can wait. Right? Hey, if we could wait for Danny Ferry, and if the Spurs could wait for David Robinson, we can wait for Nerlens Noel.
Robinson didn't have a blown out knee. But
hey, it's happening.
Hey, now we're splitting hairs. We're splitting hairs.
Yeah, splitting hairs, man.
That's the bottom up show, baby.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back later in the week for more Cavs and NBA talk. Make sure you're subscribing on the iTunes. We're on iTunes now. Links are on the blog, thebottomupshow.blogspot.com. And we're also on Twitter at thebottomupshow. Catch you guys later.